Left Out in the Doghouse. I'm Robin. I'm the host of Roots and Berries. Fun Drive is officially over, but if you missed your opportunity, you can still donate at cjsffundrive.ca or text DONATE to 778-782-2573 and get into the club to be one of radio's best friends for 2024.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is your own Charlotte Farrell, Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at cjsf.com. Today we are crawling. Not literally. We're hearing about something wonderful called the East Side Culture Crawl. And our guests are going to introduce themselves right after we have our land acknowledgement.
Today's show is being produced and broadcast on the unceded and ancestral territory of the Hulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples, including the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Kwikwetlem, and others.
We have a treat today in that we're going to have a preview to the culture crawl, East Side Culture Crawl, that goes on from the 14th through the 19th of November.
17th.
I gave you two extra days, 14th through the 17th.
Thanks.
We have three guests, and we're going to start with Sierra McTavish, who is the East Side. She has many hats. So, but first, I want to ask you, people have different perceptions of the word crawl. So here, what are we crawling? How are we crawling?
How are we crawling? I feel like, I mean, that's such an individual question. Anyone can crawl any way they like, but the general premise is that you'll be making your way around the culture crawl boundaries in the East Side Arts District, starting from one studio to another. So crawling could look like stopping at one studio, maybe grabbing a bite to eat at a restaurant nearby, going to another studio and making your way the area, meeting different artists and artisans who are part of the festival, and enjoying art with tens of thousands of people, and really getting to see the heart of our city. That's how I would describe crawling to me.
We'll come back to asking you more about your particular different hats, but I'll ask you the same question. David, what does it mean to you? What is a crawl? What does this crawl mean?
It's a great opportunity to show your work to the public, to open your doors and get out of your reclusive mode, as many artists are. Connect with other artists, connect with buyers, of course, collectors, art dealers, art consultants, designers, but mostly with the public. I mean, it's just such a great opportunity to share your art with a huge number of people from all walks of life, and it's a privilege to be a part of it.
Princess Susie, what does it mean to you to take part in a crawl? And when you hear that word, what does it, what pictures, images does it generate in your mind?
It's funny because it generates like a snake or something, like doing some kind of like that snake dance, you know, like that. And I guess it is kind of like a dance. It is like a dance. People are moving from place to place, and the artist's minds are moving from place to place, and emotions are moving from place to place, and you're kind of swiveling in and out of things. And you're, you know, for me, like, I'm a sculptor and a painter, so, you know, it's an opportunity for me to see my work in place, you know, and in relation to each other and in relation to other people. But the other thing, besides the kind of visual that I was thinking is really cool about the crawl, and I echo everything that David and Sierra have said, is that it's very unexpected. Like, people's perceptions of your art are very varied. And the people, sometimes the people who are the most sensitive and articulate are actually potentially the least educated around art, but are feeling it from some kind of gut level, and it takes them into their imagination in a place that I don't know if they use all the time or they don't, but like into a kind of dreamlike state that I find really interesting. And I noticed that particularly on the preview show for the Green show at Strange Bedfellow, speaking with a few young men there, and how perceptive they were. Just so perceptive, and I don't think art is their world. So I think that's really interesting, in addition to all the people that, you know, that David talks about in terms of collectors and gallerists and curators and, you know, and also for me, it's an opportunity for my friends to see my work in this kind of context. And I teach a lot of students at Arts Umbrella. So it's an opportunity for parents to bring children and to educate them on a kind of deeply personal way, because they see what their instructor is doing and what other artists are doing.
Oh, thank you. Sierra, could you give us some of the highlights? I know there's some new things happening. And here at CGSF, we've had a few times some roundtable discussions with people who are doing nature walks as a way of relieving stress, and also with the question of accessibility. So I understand there is something new that's happening this year with the Culture Crawl around accessibility. So could you highlight three or four things that are different and then speak to that new addition?
Yeah, definitely. And thank you for that question. So, of course, the same things are back, where you're getting to see work in artist studios outside of the gallery's white box, and you're getting to have those personal connections. But something we also realize is that not everyone in the city has access to an artist studio, has somewhere that they produce art, but they are still producing art largely at their home. So very much active, very much part of this community for many years, but don't have a studio space, which has previously prevented them from being part of the Culture Crawl. So looking at to address this, we organized this year for the first time ever a pop-up studio, which is taking place at Progress Labs at 1422 William Street, where we have four artists who are home-based artists who are going to be showing their work as part of the Culture Crawl. And this is our first year doing it. It's a pilot. And our hope and our intention with this space is really to open up the crawl to people who previously weren't able to be a part of it, but again, are just very much a part of our creative community. Yeah, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And it makes me think of another image of crawling, you know, that babies start trying to crawl and they scoot and they drag, and then they get to the point where you're very fast with crawling. And crawling is an option. It might be when they want to hide. So I just am thankful for that, because that's one of the things we've discussed a few times on our show with people who have accessibility issues. They're very talented, but just haven't had that opening. Also, with people who might be coming in a wheelchair or coming with hearing aid, different things, will there be some ways that signage that help people who are assisting people who have accessibility challenges or who are going on their own? Or will there be? How will people know where?
Yeah, that's a great question, and something, because you know, so many of these artist studios are in of what we call strange and unusual buildings.
Yes.
Many of them were previously not artist studio spaces and have been reclaimed by artists. One that comes to mind is Gore Studio, which is actually in a noodle shop. So, and this can prove challenge. And one of the things that we've implemented to try and help support people in their access to these spaces is on our website. If you go to culturecrawl.ca and you go to the sidebar and you go to explore buildings, you can see all the buildings that are part of the Culture Crawl. And there is a checkbox, if you scroll past the map, where you can check to filter all the buildings by accessibility. And that will actually show you and display only wheelchair accessible buildings. So there's about 30 wheelchair accessible buildings that are part of the culture crawl. And if you don't use a website, because I know many people don't have access to a computer or a cell phone and rely on those paper copies, we also have our program, which has all the building, most of the building listings as well. And on there, you can see the diamond to tell you if it is a wheelchair accessible building. And you can pick those up all around the city. There is a map of them on our website of where you can find them. But some common places would be the library, JJ Bean at our office, 716 East Hastings. They'll also be at many of the artist studios, spaces where you can pick them up. We'll have a collection of them at Parker Street Studios at our volunteer concierge. And this is a great way to help kind of plan your route around the buildings that are accessible. And then another thing I really like to let people know about, and something that Susie mentioned that we do, is our preview exhibitions, which are currently on. They're running at various dates, dependent on the location, until the 29th at The Cult, Pendulum, Alternative Creations, and Strange Fellows. And all of these venues were chosen because they are fully accessible. And so what we find here is that folks can get a really good overview of all the culture crawl artists, including ones that aren't in accessible buildings, and get to see these artists. So that's a really great way of kind of seeing a great overview of who is part of the culture crawl in these really accessible buildings, that make it a bit easier to be participating in the culture crawl.
Well, I'm excited with the way it contributes to walking. It's two other programs that people want to do, or encouraging people to do, to walk more, get fresh air, and to have something that you don't have to pay. Some people's programs, just to get the program, you've got to pay $1 or $5 or whatnot. So I think it's commendable that people can just pick it up at so many locations.
Yes, and yeah, all the previews are free. All of the Culture Crawl programming is free and available. And we really want this to be an event that anyone can come out to, bring a family, a friend, and be a part of.
Now, are there any other? Well, I'm going to go to one of the other ones of our featured guests, but I was going to ask. Are there other ways that, as an artist, that you are both a participant? You are an artist, but you're also teaching, you're also promoting. How does that role feel to you, David?
At first, I was really uncomfortable with the idea of promoting myself and marketing myself and all those kind of dirty words that artists don't like, actually. But I got to put food in my fridge and I've got to pay my rent. So I had to learn those skills, and I've improved over the years. I've gotten better at it. In the beginning, I was just terrified to even post something on Facebook. You know, I just thought, you know, why would anybody want to look at that? Or just kind of an insecurity. But eventually you get comfortable with social media and you get better at it. I've taken out print ads in magazines. And again, I'm a full-time artist and I got to pay my bills. I don't have another job. So I literally have to sell, and it puts a little pressure on me, but I chose this life, and I'm making it work. I'm not rich, but I have food in my fridge and my heat's on, so I'm doing okay. It was just, as I say, it was a skill that I had to learn. And I looked at other artists at the crawl, actually, and one of my studio mates, she was amazing. She was working the room. She was selling. And I thought, I can't do that. You know, it seems so foreign to me, but she was the one who sold a bunch of paintings that weekend, and I didn't sell any. So I thought, there's something to that. I better check that out. And again, when the bills arrive in the mailbox, you got to pay them. So it's like survive or perish.
Jesse had a question about the length of time that some people have been with this, with the culture crawl.
I've been there 14 years, I think, 14 or 15 years. I think Susie's probably been there longer than me.
No, 7 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But there are some people who literally started on day one. I think it's 28 years ago. And it had a different name then, I believe. Sarah would know more about that than me. But eventually it became the Culture Crawl. It was the same event. And it just grew and grew and grew. And now there are, I believe, over 500 artists and tens of thousands of visitors. So it's just grown exponentially. And even the pandemic couldn't keep it down. It still managed. I think we canceled 1 year. But after that, it's grown again. And the numbers are back up. And everybody's thriving.
I'm curious to know how you've seen the crawl change over the 14 years or 7 years or however long you've each been involved.
I don't know how much the crawl has changed. It's changed for me because I've changed my studio space. I've been in the same space, but I started out, you know, in a much smaller part of this space. And then I had that small space and a bigger part of the space that someone wasn't using it in this, still in this area. Now I'm in half the space at the back, but it's like a really beautiful space with skylight and windows. So how has it changed? I feel like it, you know, there are nuances of how it changed. Like, I think that Sierra is better at talking about that because you're like administratively making things change. But there's always been the shows that you could be in. There's always been the curators and, you know, which have gotten shows through this. There's always been just a lot of people and food trucks and high energy community amongst the artists, you know, a sense of celebration, a sense of walking through each other's studios as you get a moment to do that. But I think that that's like consistent with what it's always been.
What do you see? Because there seem to be things happening on three levels. One, there's someone working with the artists to get them ready and prepared to be in the show. There's someone working with the people who are going to be vendors there. And then the other groups, from senior groups, children's groups, different groups. Do you have three different levels of administration dealing with all of these things?
I can answer that. So we have our managing team, so their executive and artistic director, Esther, and our managing director, Aaron, and then our administrator, Steph, and myself, who's the artist coordinator. And then we also have Chris, who is our special projects and grants coordinator. So administratively, it would be primarily, you know, myself and Steph doing the day-to-day work, and then Esther and Aaron doing more of the management positions.
What does that level, I mean, it sounds harmonious.
But yeah.
As a reflection with each of you in terms of the emerging Vancouver, and Vancouver as a city of art, or Vancouver as a city of communities, how do you see this contribute, or what do you see, what picture do you see the crawl developing, emerging for Vancouver?
Yeah, how do I see the crawl emerging for Vancouver? I mean, I feel like it's such an important part of Vancouver's artistic history. I think your question regarding how have we seen it change, just as an organization, I think one way we've seen this area and this community change is we have lost a lot of arts and culture production space in this city. Mm-hmm. We did release a report documenting this loss called A City Without Art, No Net Loss Plus. And really what this showed is that we've lost 4.5 football fields, CFL football fields of square feet of wow. artist space within a decade. So I think what we see is we've seen the crawl over these years, these 28 years, grow in both its artist participation. You know, I think David mentioned that we have 500 artists now, over 90 artists new just this year. You know, we're at 55 buildings plus. So it's grown, and there's such an appetite for art and culture and people who want to be creative in the city. But I think what we've seen is the resilience of artists to shift and change, but also how difficult this has become in this city. And artists, I think, are a testament. You know, they will keep going and they will keep fighting for making it. So I really see the crawl as a really big part of the history of art in this city. And also the future is, I think it really does show the resilience of artists and the appetite of the community to go out and connect and to be a part of the artistic community in Vancouver. But it is, it's also a challenging environment as well.
Yeah, I see, you know, we talk about four football fields, the connection between that and other discussions that are happening within the city about land use and the disappearance of space for community for living with the emergence of towers.
Yes, definitely. Yes. And artists, I mean, it is one of the lowest income sectors. And so a big part of our focus, too, is empowering artists through opportunities like our preview shows to have opportunity for growing their capacity to have more employment, to be more efficient. Like David is a full-time artist. I would love to see the ability for more people to be able to say they are full-time artists in the city.
Yeah, I think the Culture Crawl is a great opportunity for people to get out and experience the art that's happening in the city and show that there is a demand for that. And that in itself can sort of help build that momentum towards having programs that create more art space or what have you. And in that vein, I think, you know, one of the great things is people being able to come out and see the art and see the artists in their studios and how it's made. I wonder, we can start with David, I guess. I'd also like to hear from Susie, just what people can expect to experience if they come and visit you in studio.
Well, they're going to have to hoof it up four flights of stairs. There is an elevator. I'm at 1000 Parker Street, which is the largest of the buildings. There is an elevator for anybody who has difficulty going up the stairs. And you can phone. There's a phone number you can phone, and somebody will come and assist you. So first of all, you got to go up four flights of stairs to my studio on the fourth floor. I have a huge studio. It's very expensive, but I'll be showing about 20 paintings and digital works that I print on aluminum. What can they expect? Well, they'll walk in the door, and I'll give them a smile, and I'll ask them if they have any questions, and feel free to browse. Some people you can just tell. You have to read the crowd a little bit. Some people just want to be left alone, and they just want to walk around and look at the art. Some people do a flyby almost. They're on their phone talking to somebody else, and they're not even looking at the art. Their legs are moving, there are kids and dogs and old senior citizens, and everybody you can think of ends up there. And everybody's a critic, too. It's really interesting to listen to the comments. My work is very expressive, and there was one woman who didn't realize I was the artist, and she said to her friend, "He must have been abused as a child." And I wasn't. But it's just really interesting to see how people perceive your art. And some people think it's amazing, and some people think my kid could do that, and everything in between. And the whole thing is just a wonderful experience. It's unlike a gallery opening, which can be kind of stiff and formal, and people get dressed up. This is so casual, and whether you like art or not, you're going to see something that you're going to find intriguing, or something, if you don't like it, you can react against it. And so there's a dialogue that's created that doesn't exist elsewhere. So this event is perfect for that. There's a community feeling. You know, a lot of the people who attend, not all, but a lot are from the neighborhood, from the east side of Vancouver. People drive in from Abbotsford and Surrey and the west side of Vancouver. It's just grown, and I think it's a main feature, or its attractive feature, is just the casual nature of it, and the fact that you can see so many different artists with so many different styles and mediums and techniques, all in a day, or if you want to spend 2 or 3 days. There's nothing like it that I know of in Canada on this scale. It's really a wonderful addition to the culture of Vancouver. And this weekend, I think, isn't it Grey Cup weekend too?
Also, yep.
Yeah. Busy. So that's going to bring, hopefully, more people to the event. And I'll hand it off to Susie then.
Thank you.
What will people expect when they come into your studio? Treats?
So I am also at 1000 Parker Street, also on the fourth floor, just down the hall from David's. And my studio space, Studio 410, you walk in and there, it's a shared space. So first you see Louise Selecki-Weir's work. She's a sculptor and it's figurative and it's very realistic and wonderful, wonderfully crafted work. And then there are two spaces at, you know, past that space. And there's Claire and Lisa, who are both painters and fairly abstract painters. And then, and they work with acrylics and with oils and waxes. And then you come into my space and you first see Francis Tiffany's work. And he's a figurative painter, very realistic, more in the vein of Louise's work. And then you walk into my space, which is, I've had it described a few different ways lately that I thought were interesting words. An artist who I just met in Italy, a very sophisticated but hermit artist, he described my work as savage neoclassical, which I thought was a fabulous description of my work. I never heard anyone say that before. And actually a person from the Kroll who's who juried the preview shows, he described my work, I think he said it was sumptuous and I'm losing the word. You know when you're good at something? Oh God, I forget what it is. Forget that one. But anyway. Yeah. But, you know, my work is figurative, and I am a figurative ceramic sculptor who employs other materials to bring out more of the character of whatever it is that I am creating. The work, I kind of call them self-portraits, mostly because people say they look like me. And so I've decided, I guess, they're self-portraits. The ones that are more intentionally self-portraits are a series called Sipora. And Sipora is my Hebrew name. It means bird. So those pieces all have a bird in some way. And the bird and the image is like a metaphor for freedom and flight and, you know, flights of fancy and travel. But also the other part of birds, which is like landing and nesting and self-reflection and, you know, rebirth. Kind of both those things. And then the other body of work that people will see is what I call Ladies Not Waiting. And those are inspired by Velasquez's painting Las Meninas, which means ladies in waiting, and my ladies are not waiting. Mm-hmm. So that body of work is art historically based and at first based on male painters painting women who I just found enticing and was wondering what the backstory of them was. But more currently, it's based on women who are artists and who are telling their own stories. So it's, the work is inspired by Frida Kahlo and Leonora Carrington and Valley Myers, Leonore Feeney. And so there's sculptures, but then there's painting. And the paintings that you will see are inspired by the sculptures. So they're not portraits of the sculptures, but they are combining various sculptures and various ideas together, and then they grow into something that creates more sculptures. And then from that, I also have prints and collages and some smaller pieces.
Could I add one thing?
Yes.
I forgot to say what my work was about. The theme of my work is Vancouver, basically. Everything from the grandeur and the beauty to the seedy underbelly and the disenfranchised and the downtown east side. My work covers, it's like a portrait of Vancouver that covers all the different layers of Vancouver. And they're large expressive paintings, but also photographic-based work, which I've used in order to make digital images that I print on aluminum. So mine's a combination. There's two different media.